Okay, make sure you're in fellowship as we continue on here in the analysis of Genesis 39, verses 11 through 19. After an undetermined amount of time, though it would not be for real long, Mrs. Potiphar soliciting Joseph verbally to bed down with her. An occasion arises that becomes opportunistic for her to take it at a different level, a higher level of aggression in regards to Joseph. And that is verse 11. It happened one day that he, Joseph, went into the house to do his work, and none of the men of the household was there inside. The language in the Hebrew here, the day, this one, at least insinuates that obviously for this condition to exist within the household, nobody else around, was infrequent. Yet it did probably happen on occasion, and you're left with the impression that Mrs. Potiphar was simply waiting for an occasion just like this to arise, of which then she determines to take another tactic in regards to Joseph, as she would think that he thinks like she does, that really the reason why he is abstaining and rebuffing her advances is because he's fearful of what others may think, may say, reports getting back to her husband, you know, other things that people often have to consider as they engage in activity that is less than right or good in regards to what they're doing, especially in a situation of an adulterous affair in this regards, behind closed doors, so to speak. And she thinks that if she just get Joseph now, having him and her by themselves with no other distractions around him, that physically she can, she herself, who had to restrain herself at least to a certain degree, being the wife of the master of the house, can just let herself go and physically become aggressive in regards to Joseph. So that's where we left off, point 10, page 20 of our notes. Finding the pair alone, Mrs. Potiphar makes her move, quote, and she caught him by his garment, saying, lie with me, end quote. Watafash bet beged lamed amur shakavim, her same terse command here that we saw at the beginning, to lie with me, shakavim. So 11, now the verb she caught, which is the fash in the Hebrew, means to seize or grab with force. She didn't just go up and put her hands on her on his garment. She grabbed a hold of it to obviously anchor herself physically in regards to his person and to excite him, if you will, sexually in this respect. So 12, contextually it indicates that Mrs. Potiphar threw herself physically at Joseph, aggressively now trying to remove his garment. 13, in her thinking, at least to a certain degree, quote, he will relent, unable to resist the physical stimulation of her body being thrust upon him, end quote. Obviously, she turns up the heat to try to arouse his sexual desire in this fashion. He refused to even be in close association with her from her solicitations earlier to lie with me or sit down beside me, etc. So now she just throws herself at him. Physically in this respect. And what male can resist this? See, that's her thinking. So 14, now context further demands that what part of Joseph's clothing she was grabbing was not what one would otherwise normally remove from the body, like a jacket or a shirt, a tunic, if you will, something of that regards. Slaves at this point in time in history often would be only clothed with a garment wrap around their loins, their waist, private parts, and their part of their legs. That's what she's going for. She's going for his pants, as we would look at it. So context, point 14 again, further demands that what part of Joseph's clothing she was grabbing was not what one would otherwise normally remove from the body. 15, otherwise the whole scheme of putting emphasis on this piece of clothing makes no sense. It's just a shirt or something like that. It doesn't fit the context. No, she's going for his britches to expose him, if you will. 16, now her command, quote, lie with me, end quote, would have the tone of a highly sexually energized female to try to transfer her sexual energy in a lustful way, heated way, is her tactic, as she is obviously rubbing against him and things of this nature. Not to get too graphic, but it's here. I'm going to report it. That's my job. 17, even under these conditions, Joseph did not capitulate to her demand. Quote, and he left his garment in her hand and fled and went outside. While Zah beged Beit Yad, while Nus, while Yatsa Hachutz. 18, Joseph forfeited the article of clothing of which Mrs. Potiphar had a death grip on and ran from the scene to outside the house. Obviously, in his situation, to try to do anything physically to her to stop her madness was basically out of the question for a slave to strike someone like that, but that'd be immediate death on his part. She's not going to let go. He's going, you want it, you can have it, I'm out of here. And there he flies and gets completely out of the premise of occupation in this regard. So 19, now the verb he left, azab in the Hebrew, has the nuance to loose, in quotes, picturing him trying to hang on to the article of clothing, at least to a certain degree, and then finally relenting, not to her intentions, but just to get away from this siren. An old English term, maybe not prevalent today, a siren refers to a dangerous sexual nymph, a nymphomaniac. That's exactly what she's acting like. And dangerous to boot. So 20 now, whether the situation left him naked or half naked or not is not disclosed. But essentially, we can say it's at least implied. 21, however, the article of clothing will be strong enough evidence to give credence for Mrs. Potiphar's eventual claim of the attempt at rape having occurred, as she will take this article of clothing that she had a hold of. And she lays it out next to her on the bed so that when Mr. Potiphar walks into the house, walks into the room, he'll recognize Joseph's clothes laying next to her and what article of clothing it is to give credence, obvious leverage in regards to the lie she's going to lay upon him. So it all points to the fact that he probably did run out of that house in the breeze. It's when you wish you wasn't going commando, I guess. So 22, now verse 13, or excuse me, 21. However, the article of clothing will be strong enough evidence to give credence to Mrs. Potiphar's eventual claim of the attempted rape having occurred. It'll be strong enough evidence to give at least some leverage in her claim of rape. So 22, verse 13 is then presented as a moment of interruption for Mrs. Potiphar to ponder the situation. Quote, when she saw that he had left his garment in her hand and had fled outside. Well, Hayakaf Ra'ah Ki Azab Eged Yadwa Nus Hachus. So, obviously, it's a series of events that occurs. Everything is not just second after second. This goes on, the struggle goes on. He finally just lets her have the article of clothing just to get away from her. And he runs outside. Now this is a moment for her to ponder, consider the situation at hand. Her prey got away from her once again. So 23, this clues the reader, this moment of interruption that we're given here in the text, this clues the reader that though her original strategy was preconceived, her next move was formulated in the moment. So, waiting for an opportunity when they might be alone. Now, what happens? Her next decision comes about not in a pre-planned way, not in a preconceived way, but is formulated in the moment. Her phallic lust, that's burning, desire burning in her, is obviously being splashed away once again with a big bucket of water. And her STA transfers to another form of expression. 24, vindictiveness or revenge. Spite, all the things that would be associated with this. Vindictiveness takes over in the throes of her sexual frustration. And she contrives a plan to take revenge on Joseph as well as provide cover for her own immorality. 25, as one commentary points out, someone is going to have to answer for the piece of clothing left in her possession. What are you doing with Joseph's breeches? So she's thinking fast on her feet, and she schemes, contrives a story, a lie, to try to satisfy her SCA anger now, spite, vindictiveness. In the midst of her sexual frustration. So 26, it becomes clear that Mrs. Potiphar was determined to lie her way out of the situation, and she determines to make the most of it for her own STA gratification. It's still about satisfying the STA. See, it's not about a matter of doing what's right. And I cannot over-exaggerate or over-explain or dig too deep into communicating the power of the STA as it's so presented here in this text. It is a powerful monster. And here you see it running, as we are reading it, running unbridled, out of control, doing whatever it has to do to try to find some relief in regards to its expression. So 27 here, she is still obstinately trying to satiate the STA in some form or fashion. The STA is just as stubborn as you are, as people are in their negative volition and rejection of the truth otherwise, in regards to what it wants. Truly the saying, quote, hell hath no fury like a woman scorned, end quote, frames Mrs. Potiphar. That's the kind of woman she is. The kind of female that she represents. She has been spurned, denied, and now she's going to have revenge. 29, her first thought now in the process of this scheme, her first thought is to establish an alibi for herself. First thing I got to do is concoct a story of why I might have this article of clothing. So 30, the alibi that she's going to create or manufacture here would provide a test case for her lie and in addition solicit support on her behalf. So that's 31 in verses 14 through 15. Whereas 14a, verse 14a, quote, she called to the men of her household and said to them, see, he has brought in a Hebrew to us to make sport of us. While Karah Lamed Ish Ba'ith, while Amar Lamed Lamed, Amar Ra'ah Bo Lamed Ish Ivri, Lamed Tisakach Bet. 32, she sends word for the otherwise absent male slaves having household duties to assemble. Front and center. Finds one and tells them, get the rest of them in here now. See. Barking her orders. The English phrase, quote, and said to them, end quote, is literally in the Hebrew, as I brought out in our parsing, and said, while saying to them, while amar, lamed, lamed, amar, the verb and the infinitive back to back. So 34, now the Hebrewism indicates a twofold purpose. Obviously, in the English, we understand it simply as it's written out. But the Hebrew is more explicit. It's more colorful. So the Hebraism indicates a twofold purpose for the conversation. As we have already pointed out, that is to garnish support and to establish her lie. Twofold purpose here in speaking to them, and that is to try to establish a witness base and then to concoct her own defense, which is a lie. So 35 further, it suggests that her words were spontaneous, playing it by ear, more or less, you know, as fast as her thoughts might go. Time is of the essence. So 36, now in her speaking to the others, she does not call Joseph by name, but only as a man, a Hebrew, Ish Ivri. So 37, her approach here is designed to be derogatory, feeding any anti-Semitism among the ranks, first and foremost. As one might use the race card to stir up feelings that otherwise might not be present. Again, the Hebrews were not alien completely in regards to the Egyptians. They had a past history, as well as a reputation that has been established since the time of Abraham throughout the land. So you got to figure, you got all these other slaves over the years have watched this one Hebrew be promoted and advanced over and over, and he's in charge of them. So 38, then she charges her husband as responsible for Joseph's presence in the phrase, quote, he has brought in. He has brought in, end quote. Who has brought in? Potiphar has. This Hebrew slave. This is designed to appeal to any mental attitude, rebellious nature a slave may have towards authority. Not only in Joseph, but as it is, and obviously a lot of us may have had a recent feelings, if you will, to use that term, in regards to our own situation of being oppressed, being under the thumb of somebody. And how it can easily crank up retaliatory or rebellious, antinomian even, response regards to people towards authority. So here she's playing her husband, trying to present him in a less than desirable light. So again, we see kind of what kind of female this woman was. So your owner has brought him in here, and everybody grits their teeth. You know, who wants to be under the thumb of slavery? Generally, the normal person does not. So, 40, now she recuses herself. The language, paying attention to details, brings all this out. She recuses herself, dismisses any prosecution from her own self in this respect. In that authoritarian role, for the moment at least, by utilizing plural suffixes with the prepositional phrases to us, as in he brought in to us, I'm included, see. And of us, as in to make sport of us. Why is she using the plural of this? Her lie is going to basically center in on her person to Potiphar. She's trying to ingratiate herself to make her feel, to make her look like she's just one of them. She's just a woman. Under the authority of the same guy that, may cause him to chafe in rebellion. The SCA is, by its very nature, antinomian, spiritually and often otherwise, ethically, morally, rebellious. It hates to be told, do this or don't do that. So 41, here she leverages her accusation. See, she's got to convince these guys. She's got to convince her audience to go along with her on this, if nothing else. See. So 41, she leverages her accusation, playing the sympathetic role of those that must adhere to the decisions of others in authority, as if she too suffers with them, as I stated, as a woman and as a wife. So, you know, I'm in the same kind of shoes, even though I may be the owner's wife. I'm under authority. And I have no say in any of this, see. Uh, 42, now the infinitive of the verb to make sport, lamed to sakak, it means to mock or laugh at. So what that phrase is doing is 43, she's trying to paint her husband as someone that doesn't truly care about others, but about others, illustrated by using Joseph to belittle the rest of the staff. 44, that is, he's using an, quote, uppity Hebrew, end quote, to demean or ridicule all concerned. That's the kind of message she's trying to get over. Who is this Hebrew that's in charge of everything? Her husband doesn't care about your feelings, doesn't care about my feelings, you know. All the garbage that the SCA will kick up to create dust and a cloud to bail over the truth. That a slave is elevated to authority over all the master owns could easily rankle the pride of other slaves under jealousy or other resentment. To push another person's buttons of their SCA. We all do it to somebody here or there, generally in life. And when you learn about people, you learn what buttons to push. She obviously was familiar with the slaves. Maybe have heard talk of disgruntledness, maladjustment, the prejudice that you find even among lower ranks of society. And she uses all this as ammunition to push buttons, to try to get their SCA going. And whether they might believe it or not, at least they would walk off, well, that's right, he deserves it anyway. You know, that kind of attitude. So the first part of it is to slather them up, stir their STAs up to join her or side with her, be sympathetic to her in regards to what she tells them next. So 46 and verse 14b, she then establishes the foundation for her story. This is the foundation part. He came in to lie. He came in to me to lie with me, and I screamed or called out. Bo el lamed shakav im wow karab bet kol gadol. Cried out greatly, gadol, and screamed. So 47. The language makes clear that she is accusing Joseph of sexual assault. Via the phrase, he came in to me to lie with me. Even in the Hebrewism, it's pretty clear. Forty-eight, she then declares that she, quote, screamed, end quote, at some time during the assault. Now, obviously, the house was empty at the time, so any claim otherwise by the slaves could not be substantiated. Her lie has some substance to it, at least some logic that's applied to it. So the fact that the house was empty, she screamed, well, who could prove her wrong? See. 50, even if one might have been close enough, let's say for instance, someone was just right outside the door or something, to to have heard a scream and suggest it did not occur could be accused of lying themselves and risk accusation of complicity for not coming to her aid. So she holds the ammunition in her hand. They're just slaves. One wants to take issue with her. She could just go off, and they probably knew her pretty well. No, I don't think so. I don't want to cross this bitch. No. They could find themselves in their own hot water just by denying that they heard anything. 51, this woman was a devious female, as if I need to put that in my notes, but I did. Pretty obvious. She then takes advantage of Joseph's immediate departure to throw in a little truth with her lie to give it an air of legitimacy. Often, stories concocted of lies will throw in some semblance of the truth. Quote, and it came about when he heard that I raised my voice and screamed, that he left his garment beside me and fled and went outside. That part is true. Not the part about raising her voice and screaming. But yeah, he left his garment. Here it is. So wow, Hayakoth, Shama. Shema Kirum Kol Wal Kara Wal Azad Beged Etza Wal Nus Wal Yatsa Jutz. That's verse 15. So 53, obviously the only part that was true was him leaving rushing outside without his attire. A search for Joseph could be made, not finding him in the house where he should be performing his duties, adding leverage to her story. Oh, where is Joseph, by the way? As he would normally be there overseeing things, see. 55, with her vindictive scheme established now, it only remains to await Potiphar's return, per verse 16. Quote, so she left his garment beside her until his master came home. While Nuka Beged Etzel at Bo Adon El Bayah. 56, the English verb she left, Nuka. Literally in the Hebrew means, quote, to rest or to settle, end quote. And would be best translated laid out. To lay it out. So 57, it implies that she took the garment and conspicuously positioned it beside her in such a way as to immediately catch the eye of Potiphar when entering the room. Where have you been? This is what's happened here. You can just hear it, man. 58. Obviously, this will raise eyebrows, and she uses it to initiate her accusation in verses 17 through 18. I told you she's a schemer. So she sets up her prop. She's got to have her prop first. See, well, that's going to catch him off guard immediately. Walks in. What the hell? Yeah. And then she just launches in. So 59, the effect of the strategically placed garment was to take advantage of Potiphar being off guard to the situation, allowing her barrage of slander to have maximum impact. Deflection, fire, go for it. 60, the phrase, quote, then she spoke to him with these words, Wow, the bar el kaf devar paella lamad lamad amer, end quote, utilizes another double emphasis of her speaking here, highlighting her very words, debar, the verb, debar, the noun, and then the infinitive, lamad, lamad, amar, while saying, verse 17a. So 16, now while the twofold emphasis of speaking in verse 14 suggests a spontaneity, as she called the men in the household to begin with, and manufactures her story there on the spot, more or less. So while that suggests a spontaneity, now our verse indicates words rehearsed. She's laid out her alibi, and she's laid out her prop. She's waited for Potiphar to show up back to the estate and to come to the room. During that time, she's going over and over in her mind exactly how she is going to speak to him and what she's going to say. So 62, Mrs. Potiphar went over and over in her mind exactly what she's going to say to Potiphar, having committed her lie to memory. You want to make sure you get your lie straight. That's my story, and I'm sticking with it. See, here we go. 63, again, she throws shade towards her husband, using common vernacular today, with the same derogatory tone used with the slaves. Quote, the Hebrew slave whom you brought to us came in to me to make sport of me. Bo el ha eved ha ivory. Asher bo lamed lamed tesakat. Bet. 64, now her accusation towards her husband, again, this is the way the SJA works. It's going to find blame somewhere else rather than to take the blame for itself. So 64, her accusation towards her husband reveals the contentious side to her SJA. She holds him in contempt. It's something that dealing with authorities, you should refrain from letting your mental attitude get that far, at least, under your sin nature. To hold authority in contempt. Obviously, if there's something done wrong, well, that's one thing. But this just shows her general attitude towards her husband. I mean, she's obviously used to speaking to him like this. That's the way some women are. They speak venom consistently in regards to how they deal with their spouse or others under their authority, that they may hold in contempt. And that's what rebellion against authority will create in regards to your SGA, and that is contempt for authority. So you've got to stay on top of that. Don't let it get away from you here. So here, her accusation, you have brought to us this Hebrew slave, reveals her contentious side to her SDA. 65, her tactic here is to play on any guilt from her husband, not paying closer attention to her, and allowing an unsavory type to be in the same house as her and the rest. Again, to try to transfer the blame to him, to make him look like he's really the one guilty here. So 66, the difference here is she avoids blaming him and disparaging all the other slaves and simply accuses him of making sexual sport with her. The singular suffix of the preposition bet of me. In other words, with the slaves, he said she used us in regards to Potiphar making sport of us. Here, she avoids that, obviously. She includes the whole household in regards to Potiphar's actions But the direct accusation is singular in regards to her own person. 67, now the sexual, quote, mocking, end quote, our term sport, to laugh at, infers the embarrassing and humiliating situation of rape, which we don't. Look at anything less than desirable in regards to this type of activity. See, rape. So again, a euphemism, if you will, is used in regards to the supposed sexual attack. 68 and verse 16, she follows through with her lie and supposed evidence. Quote, and it happened as I raised my voice and screamed that he left his garment beside me and fled outside. While Hayal Kaf Rum Kol Wal Kara Wa Azeb Beged Etzel Wal Nus Chutz. 69, she implies that she is trying to refuse his advances from her part with sternness. But not until she finally got loud and called out for help did he retreat. That's what she wants Potiphar to believe. 70 and verse 19, we have Potiphar's reaction. We have Potiphar's reaction. Now it came about when his master heard the words of his wife, while Hayakoth Shamad Adon Dabar Ishishah. 71, alone the phrase may appear to show that Potiphar had immediately made up his mind concerning the matter. As soon as he heard this words from his wife, one would think immediately his anger burned, that immediately he accused Joseph in his own mind of doing this very thing. But that's not the way this happened. You got to figure out. You got to realize this individual Joseph is someone that Potiphar has embraced completely and totally over the past decade as trustworthy. He has a history in regards to it, etc. So you can't be superficial in regards to figuring these things out. So 72. A closer look at the remainder of verse 19 suggests otherwise. Quote, which she spoke to him, saying, this is what your slave did to me. Asher Devar El Alamed Amar Kaf Ha Devar Ha Ella Asa Alamed Abed. In other words, not until she had further things to say after the fact, then his anger burned. That's what's coming out in the Hebrew here. So 73, the Hebrew, the English, she spoke to him, saying, again, uses double emphasis on her speaking that literally is translated, quote, which she has spoken to him while saying, according to these words, end quote. 74, in other words, her final words were, this is what your slave did to me, end quote, and were said after her accusation to Potiphar in verses 17 through 18. So 75, now the quote that's recorded for us compiles in one statement additional unrecorded details she gave to her husband about the assault. It's just a generalization of what your slave did to me. In other words, now she goes into detail. He physically tried to assault me, and he left his pants behind and ran out of here naked. Now she goes into detail to try to clinch her story in regards to Potiphar. So 76, in other words, she had further formulated imaginary lies of sexually explicit moves that Joseph put on her during a supposed attempt at rape. Again, pushing the buttons of the STA. You can imagine Potiphar probably was momentarily in shock, and maybe he knew his wife better than what the Bible even tells, and even that might have been a little suspicious to him she's a flirtatious type of person, and she definitely comes off like that. He has been completely won over. So what does she do? She incites his anger by cranking up a jealousy grid on his part. So in other words, point 76, she had further formulated imaginary lies of sexually explicit moves that Joseph put on her during his supposed attempt at rape. 77, this to counter any hesitancy Potiphar may have had, believing her accusation by inflaming the jealousy grid natural from husband to wife. To start talking about specific things, what he might have touched on her, you know, all kinds of lascivious sexual imagery that's appropriate between husband and wife would not be appropriate otherwise. Verse 78, accordingly then, the final phrase of verse 19 should be translated, then his anger burned. Wow, kara off. 79, it is easy to see an initial hesitation by Potiphar in disbelief of the accusations brought upon one whom he trusted with all things. 80, on to his wife, incited his jealousy, describing visuals of the sexual charged encounter, does he succumb to his emotions, replacing logic with feelings. Often it's not until visual imagery is presented verbally, etc., does the SCA truly come alive. So 80.80 again, not until his wife incited his jealousy, described visuals of the sexually charged encounter, does he succumb, Potiphar, to his emotions. Anger is emotion. It's a responder. Replacing logic with feelings. You know, first it doesn't make sense, but then after she starts describing this stuff, oh man, that's enough to piss anybody off. See? Verse 81, after this, an otherwise unexplained reason for why clothing that he probably recognized as Joseph was lying next to her when he entered the room. Another visual aid, you see. 82, it is not a stretch to imagine the effectiveness of Mrs. Potiphar's verbal sexual obscenities affecting the whole ordeal, as she had ample practice on Joseph beforehand. Day after day. No telling what she was saying to him. See? Just this thing that, how about today? No. That's not the way the essay works. That's not the way these things work. 83, if she could use verbal lewdness to satisfy her phallic grid, she could use it to satisfy her vindictiveness. A two-pronged attack, so to speak. 84, truly, the STA is twisted, and she is a prime example of it. Father, again, we thank you for the truth of your word. We ask God, the Holy Spirit, continue to lighten these things. In Jesus' name, amen.